Come on.
Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Andrew Thrasher. Andrew, are you ready to do this?
Let's get started.
Excellent. Let's do this. Andrew is a chartered market technician. He is the portfolio manager at the Financial Enhancement Group, the founder of Thrasher Analytics. He specializes in technical analysis with a focus on market timing, sector rotation strategies, stock selection, and risk management. I'm excited to have you on. Andrew, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. So I live with my wife and our dog, Brooke. Dog's name is Brooke. Wife's name is Abby. Indianapolis, Indiana. I've been here for the last 7 years. Graduated from Purdue University with a degree in financial planning. Started out working as an advisor right out of college. Did that for a couple years. And then main focus was really on the markets. So really wanted to get on the portfolio management side of the business. So shifted over to doing that, started out as an analyst, and slowly worked my way to becoming a portfolio manager. Worked for a firm here in Indy. We have several offices in central Indiana, managing about, what do we have? Probably about $350, $370 million in assets, primarily for clients that are focused on retirement. We do a lot of retirement planning, but invest in individual stocks, ETFs. We don't really use mutual funds or individual bonds, we think that. So really stick on the equity side and use ETFs for bond allocation. But like you said, I do primarily technical analysis. I work with my partner Adam, and he does more of the fundamental type work. He's a CFA. But my focus is very much on the charts, the price action. What's the market trying to tell us?
Excellent. So you touched on it a little bit. You are a CMT, Chartered Market Technician. How is that different than a CFA?
Sure. So CFA, the biggest difference is a CFA really wants to look at valuation of the market or individual stocks. They spend a great deal of time diving into the balance sheets and income statements, and they really wanted to look into break up a company or a market or what have you and really understand the inner workings. Where a CMT, we're really less concerned about the valuation side of things and really want to see what the market from a supply-demand perspective. So I'm less concerned with the cash flow of GE and how much cars that GM is making, so to speak. I really want to know, does the market think that their stock price should be going higher or lower based off of the chart? Which direction is price headed? And then looking at different indicators on price. So how is momentum looking for that chart or for that sector, for that market or commodity or whatever you want to look at? So really not trying to force our bias onto the market as a CMT, saying that we know what the valuation should be and the price is undervalued or overvalued, really allowing the market to tell us what the valuation or what the company's worth based off of the supply and demand of price.
Cool. All right. So when we talk about, or rather when I'm a person who obviously pays attention to financial media and talking heads and sure. All that kind of stuff. We talk about market timing. That's oftentimes talked about as something that's really difficult to do, and that's something we shouldn't try and do. Yet that's something that you do.
Yeah, it's funny when market timing, just those two words, market timing, has such a negative connotation. But I would love for someone to show where any type of investing is not market timing. Everything that you're any type of putting money to risk within the market, you're making you're timing that investment, whether you're doing it today or tomorrow. If you're investing off of valuation, you're timing that you think over time the valuation will rise and meet your expectation as the stock price increases. That's market timing. Whether the inputs may change and be different for person A to person B, but basically every type of investing to some degree is market timing. Now the time frame of that market timing may be different. You may be looking to invest over multiple years. But still, you're timing the market in the sense of by putting equity or putting money to risk within the financial system. It's market timing on the short term basis, people trying to day trade or things like that. That's a lot riskier and has its own set of ideals to it. But everything is really market timing. It just gets a kind of a bad connotation in the media. but I think kind of unjustly so.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess whenever we are making the decision to buy or sell some kind of an investment, we are timing the market at some level. But I think that traditionally when people think about that, they're trying to beat maybe a general market index. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to find that alpha. So they're trying to buy low and then sell high and just be smarter. But what is when you're talking about market timing, when you're focusing on it, how does that really manifest itself?
So the sense of what I market timing is more really wanting to be in the right types of assets at the right time. So it's I'm looking at a shorter term time frame. My time frame is more weeks and months, more heavily on the weeks side of that equation. Okay. And so it's really for our clients, we're not trying to shoot for the moon and look for 30% returns every year. That's not our goal for the assets that we manage. We're really more focused on asset preservation. Really trying to, for all the years of savings that they've been doing as they're trying to prepare for retirement, really try to preserve those assets. And we're also seeking out some accumulation. And so we do that through trying to time the right sectors to be in or the right stocks to get the kind of the meat of those uptrends at the same time while trying to protect on the downside. Risk management is probably our number one focus in really trying to manage the downside risks. So like the market right now, where since September, really, we've been kind of in this downtrend. So right now, our focus isn't trying to find stocks that maybe are going higher. We're really trying to kind of batten down the hatches and really try to manage the downside risk until the market environment is a little bit more favorable. So we're not always trying to find accumulation. There's different market environments and periods of time where I think it's important to really focus on downside risk versus upside appreciation. And I think kind of that's where we're at right now with our models.
Got it. I appreciate that very much. And that's probably how I should have started the conversation. Was just talking about what your approach to investing is and what your philosophies are. I'm sure that you probably have different strategies that you're using depending on
sure.
the client's risk tolerance and what they're trying to accomplish in their time horizon, all those kinds of things. Do you want to go deeper into that?
Yeah, we run two kind of more tactical models, and then we run several kind of core models. So your typical growth, balance, conservative type of risk tolerance type models, and they're longer hold periods. So we'll hold positions in there for much longer time periods because we're very tax conscious. So we don't want to be ratcheting up too much short term gains for somebody's maybe individual account or trust account, just for kind of broad examples. And then we run two shorter term, more tactical portfolios, where we have a little bit more trading activity, where we're really trying to maybe seek out a little bit more alpha and those types of models for clients that really are trying to have a larger focus on accumulation. Just kind of depends on what their financial plan is based off their conversations and work with their advisor, with our firm.
Got it. Excellent. So you are certainly of the mind that, are you of the mind that you are able to outperform the market?
I think there's been plenty of examples of people outperforming the market. I think time frame is what's critical there. I don't need to outperform the market yesterday or today. I really don't need to outperform the market at all. That's not our end goal. Our end goal for our clients is really not necessarily setting the market as the barometer, but trying to meet their financial goals. So everyone always references back to how you did against the S&P 500 or
right.
or some arbitrary index. What they don't realize, what we try to educate our clients on, is the S&P 500 doesn't retire. The S&P 500 doesn't have an end date of what those assets are for. They're not trying to buy a house. They're not trying to pay for a college tuition for maybe a child or grandchild. There's no goal there, whereas they do have a goal. They have emotions, and they can feel every tick of their account value going up and down, and they maybe have plans for those money in several years or maybe 10 or 15 years. So we're really trying to manage towards meeting those expectations versus an index that's being changed kind of behind closed doors by people at Standard & Poor's that you really have no control over and really doesn't impact your life. When you hit retirement, and if you do the stereotypical move to Florida, you don't get to wear a special badge that said, I outperformed the market for 5 of the last 10 years. There's no extra gold star in your retirement door in your nursing home when you're 90 because you've had better performance than the Dow. So those things are very arbitrary, but I think part of it is just a lack of education for the investor class. They don't know what else to compare it to. They hear people talk about from a mutual fund that they outperformed. This mutual fund outperformed on their last 3 and 5 years. So because they don't have anything else, any other barometer, that's kind of the one they adapt to. So there's a lot of financial advisors kind of have to wean off those bad habits that they've learned throughout the years to realize that it's really setting themselves as their own barometer and meeting their goals and needs. And you can have a lot more success with investing that way, especially in downturns like right now, where the market's off 10, 20%. And it's not focused on what the market's doing. It's focusing on, are you still on the right trajectory to meet your goals? And that makes the conversations about kind of managing risk and exposures and portfolios a much more fruitful conversation.
Agreed. I have this image in my head of a 80-year-old person in a nursing home in Florida angrily ripping their badge off of their chest and throwing it on the ground right now. So you've probably been passionate about the markets for a very long time. In the amount of time that you've been paying attention to where we are today, do you perceive that the market's changed? Is it more volatile? Why is it behaving the way that it is?
I think we have, especially volatility is something that I'm very passionate about. I think we see cycles of it. In 2017 was one of the lowest volatile years in history. So shocker that 2018 has kind of been the reverse of that with what we saw happen in February, right, with the VIX explosion higher and then here recently. So I think we do see cycles of volatility, which is very normal in market history. When you look back, this is not overly unique. This isn't the snowflake of markets. This is pretty normal. So I think that's what requires a steady hand in being able to manage that and understanding that. Yes, there's been some more volatility this year, but that's just part of being investing. So I do think that there are different seasons, and I think things are a little bit more volatile right now. Does that mean it will be next year? We don't know. We kind of have to see what the market throws at us and then evaluate from that point going forward. Can't just assume that just because there's high frequency trading and algos and they've now changed all the market. That's not true. It's still, those algorithms are built by humans and there's human emotion built inside of them, just from their creators. And so I don't think there's really that much different type of market structure now than there was in the 2000s.
Got it. Appreciate that. So what are some of the key indicators that you follow on a daily basis, weekly basis, quarterly basis?
So you mean from a charting perspective?
Yes.
Sure. So one of the things that I pretty much have on all my charts, so if I were to kind of have a default chart, it would be the relative strength index, so the RSI. It's a pretty common tool. It's used to measure momentum. And so what I want to see is everything has momentum to some degree, whether it's rising momentum, a stock going higher, and so momentum's rising as price goes higher, or it can have rising momentum as stocks go lower. I view the market as if you were to take a tennis ball and throw it in the air. It's going to speed up as it goes higher, but then it begins to slow down before it peaks. And so that's what I often want to look for with our portfolios and looking for investment opportunities is when that momentum begins to diverge. So as that tennis ball begins to slow before it finally peaks out, same thing with the market and with stocks. That momentum often, again, not always, but often will begin to slow before we start to see a trend change within that underlying chart, whether it's a daily, weekly, monthly, whatever time frame you look at. Typically when momentum begins to decline and diverge, whether it's when stocks are going up or down, we often will see a trend change. So I'm always looking at momentum. I want to know what the momentum is of whatever I'm charting. And I also like to look at volume. I think volume is very important and evaluating whether to build a track kind of money flow. Again, at the end of the day, it's all about supply and demand, and volume is a way to measure that. So the two that I probably spend the most time looking at are different ways to evaluate volume and then looking at momentum.
Excellent. So you are paying really close attention, obviously, to the overall market and what it's doing. You said that one of your partners is maybe paying closer attention to individual equities. Mm-hmm. And part of the introduction I gave you was that you are interested in picking or selecting individual stocks. So how do you bring those two worlds together?
So we pair pretty well together. So we're constantly talking. And so if there's something that I'm seeing as a chart of XYZ stock is setting up to where I think it could go higher. I'll talk with him about it. He'll kind of look under the hood and see, is this fundamentally a sound company? It doesn't have to be necessarily the 30% revenue growth with the book to value to blah, 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 whatever it is. As long as the stock doesn't look broken, if we're investing from a technical perspective, then it kind of gets put on our watch list to look for an entry. Kind of the same way, the opposite way, if he starts looking at companies through his screens and says, hey, this company makes a lot of sense. I think it's probably undervalued. I think it could go higher based off of sales growth or whatever it is that he's looking at. Then I'll look at it from a technical standpoint. What is the market? Is there potential for appreciation on the chart side? Is supply demand supportive of kind of what he's seen within the inner workings of the company? And so we try to pair them together to where maybe I'm more focused on the technical side, but still want to own solid companies that aren't ideally going to be the next Enron or WorldCom.
Right.
And at the same time, he wants to find companies that maybe have a catalyst from a fundamental viewpoint. But again, what pays, price is what pays. And so just because the company is undervalued, it's how the market dictates that valuation. That's what leads to portfolio values being able to go higher. So we need the market to start to agree. So that's what we look at from a technical standpoint, saying, okay, this company maybe is going to go up in value. And then we look for confirmation in the chart. So we try to pair the fundamentals with the technicals and do that kind of to different degrees, depending on who came up with the initial idea. But we try to get support on both ends.
Makes sense. So if people are listening and they say, you know what, this sounds really great. It sounds cool. I would like to learn more about this. How would you coach an ordinary investor to educate themselves, not from, you know, 0 to 100, but just to get started learning about some of the things you've been talking about?
I think I'm a big reader. I really like to read a lot of finance books, which maybe aren't the most entertaining. It's not the next John Grisham book or whoever. Great. I don't even know a lot of nonfiction authors. But I would think there's a lot of great books out there. Some of my favorites. I do a lot of growth style investing. William O'Neill wrote a great book, very popular, called How to Make Money in Stocks. I think it does a great job of looking at actually pairing together the fundamentals and technicals. William O'Neill's is a big believer in that and finding fundamentally sound companies that are setting up on their charts. So I think that's a great place to go. Edwards and McGee has written some of the best books on technical analysis. I think the Market Wizards books are great for people just wanting to get started investing. There are a series of interviews with some of the best traders throughout history and how they view the market, and they're all different and they all trade different markets. So it kind of gives a broad view of investing in commodities or Forex or stocks or bonds or people running hedge funds or mutual funds or kind of different flavors of investing. If you really want to get into technicals, one of my favorite technical analysis books is called Technical Analysis for the Trading Professional by Constance Brown. She wrote a really great book that looks at the Relative Strength Index. She does a lot of work with that. That really helped solidify my interest in using the RSI indicator. So I think those are kind of the being able to read and kind of devour some of the market information from a book perspective and less so from financial media or social media. There's a lot of great things on social media, but it can just be overwhelming. So I would say start with some of the foundational books like William O'Neill, Constance Brown, Edward McGee, and just kind of start there and then find what type of style of investing that you're most fits your personality and interest and kind of go from there.
Excellent. Well, Andrew, Savage Nation is ready for your difference making tip. What do you have for them?
I would say my difference making tip is really being able to manage on the emotion side and be able to have a process that you can follow. So like I said, those books can help maybe carve out a process, but being able to really have a solid process that you could literally write out your process on a pad of paper and be able to reference that when maybe the market's trading against you, but being able to have something you can as a bedrock to lean on versus just trying to kind of go with the winds of the market and constantly trading the way you place trades, but really have a solid process, I think is the biggest tip. And it takes a long time to develop. It's not something you can do in a single day or week or month, but put a lot of focus in having a repeatable process helps when the markets get tough.
Well, that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on. Come on. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
Sure. So I tweet quite a bit. I'm on Twitter pretty often at Andrew Thrasher. I also blog, do a lot of technical analysis on my blog at athrasher.com. So those are probably the two best places to find some of my research, and would love to connect. So shoot me a message there, and I'm always happy to answer questions.
Awesome. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Andrew your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Follow him on Twitter and also check out his blog, and I'll list both of those in the notes of the show. Thank you again, Andrew.
I appreciate having me on. Thank you.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together. What's up, Savage Nation? Please support the show by subscribing, leave us a review, and definitely feel free to share us with somebody you think would like it. Come on!